Hey, I'm Jason Warner Smith. I played Gavin on AMC's The Walking Dead, and you're listening to The Walking Dead Talk Through on Golden Spiral Media. Don't turn it off.
The Walking Dead Talk Through, Episode 84, The Bridge Review.
Welcome to The Walking Dead Talk Through. A fan podcast dedicated to The Walking Dead on AMC. Join us each week as we discuss the characters, story developments, and theories of The Walking Dead. Send in your thoughts about each episode by calling 304-837-2278. Or by visiting our feedback page at goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. And now, here's your hosts.
Hey, survivors, and welcome to another fine episode of The Walking Dead Talk Through. I'm Brian.
And I'm Mark.
And tonight, we are here to discuss Season 9, Episode 2, titled The Bridge. Written by the Mouthful, as I like to call him, David Leslie Johnson McGoldrick, who is a couple interesting things about him. He is a consulting producer and a working screenwriter. And I say working because he has written or co-written such things as Wrath of the Titans, The Conjuring 2 and 3, which I guess part 3 is coming out in 2020,
yeah,
and the upcoming Aquaman. So, I mean, he's writing some, you know, pretty high profile stuff. And he was actually a former production assistant of Darabont's on the Shawshank Redemption. So that's how he comes to The Walking Dead. His first credit was Chupacabra, and he's been, I know he was consulting producer last season. I think he wrote something in season 7. I'm not 100% sure of that. But yeah, he's a consulting producer again this season. Directed by someone who has a lot of credits in especially TV directing, Daisy von Schuller-Mayer. I think it's Mayer.
I think it's Mayer.
Yeah. This is her first time directing The Walking Dead, but she directed Fear the Walking Dead season 4, episode 6, which was titled Just in Case. And I remember that particular episode because that's when I started really getting annoyed with the story in 4A. And she has a long resume with credits. I counted 41 separate TV and film credits, and within the TV there are multiple, and most of them multiple episodes that she directed. So she's directed a ton of stuff. She's a very experienced TV director, and I think it shows this episode. Cool. All right, Mark, what did you think of The Bridge?
Well, I gave it 9 out of 10 missing saviors with ethanol.
Well, I like this episode a little more than I like last week's, and I gave it simply 9.25. Ouch. Ouches. And that's, of course, for the ouch that I vocally did when I saw Aaron's arm. But you could say also 9.25 good for nothing saviors.
that is definitely point on.
Yeah. All right. Let's go through some listener ratings. We've got quite a few this week, more than last week, actually.
Yeah. Steve gives it 9 out of 10 Episcopalian priests.
Cheryl gives it 9.25 out of 10 log rolling walkers. Very good selection there, Cheryl. I was going to use that.
Yeah, same here. Lara gives it 9 out of 10 bone saws. Oh, Aaron.
Yes, definitely. Glynis gave it 8 out of 10 Pied Piper to save your rat.
And Dieta gives it 8 out of 10 Who is that hiding in the woods knocking folks out?
Indeed.
And a bunch of emojis that are like, ooh, oh, what?
And
kind of looking.
And gnarly, gnashing teeth. Last is Claire. She says, I would give this episode 9 out of 10 pots and pans to the head. Okay. So what was that from?
That was from Daryl hitting Dustin in the head with the pot.
See, I didn't know that that was a pot. I saw that he picked up something, but I couldn't tell what it was. So
it was like definitely looked like a pan, but it was definitely a pot.
All right, so let's move on to Awesome Sauce. Awesome Sauce!
So Cheryl says, Eden cutting off Aaron's arm and the graphics of his arm crushed was gross, but really cool.
Yes, I totally agree with that. In fact, I was going to, Cheryl, you must be channeling my mind because I had a similar thought there. Steve says, the Daryl double walker kill, even though we saw it in the preview, it was still cool.
Glenna says, walker log deaths dealt by Rick's skill string shot. You know, that one shot with the, actually it was two shots. He took one shot, missed, and then he hit it again with the second shot, which was awesome. She then goes on, not awesome for Aaron, but that tense scene was done so well with Aaron's arm pinned under the log, with walkers descending on him soon and the scramble to get him out in time, which has brought back the walkers as a threat again, which I do agree because it shows the walkers as a threat. Way to go, Henry. Carl 2.0. Morgan would be proud of you. You know what it is. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Doggone it, Glynis. I just removed that from the soundboard. I only have 35 things I can put in my soundboard, so I had removed that one. And now I can't find it. So I'm going to have to go without, unfortunately. All right. Lara is next. She says, the writing. And that looks like high praise or something. I don't know. I'm so clueless when it comes to figuring out what emojis are.
It looks like a lot of waving hands, high praise, and all that good stuff. So I do agree.
And to this, I must say, better late than never.
You know what it is.
I found it, so I figured I might as well still use it. She continues. She says, in addition to Angela Kang as the new showrunner, I heard there was a purging of the writer's room of The Walking Dead. And thank the Walker gods, the writing is actually good again. Not one single eye roll in the first two episodes. And since my eyes nearly rolled out of my damn head in the last few Fear episodes, I'm so glad to be able to watch the Prime show again and actually enjoy it. Also, Lauren Cohan is just fantastic as Maggie right now. It's making me sad to know we may not be getting much more of her, for this season at least. I don't know if that's actually true about the purging of the writer's room. I know that there have been some changes in the writing's room, but I don't think there's a full purge. The reason why I say that, David Leslie Johnson McGoldrick, obviously, he was a consulting producer last time, and he's still a consulting producer. Channing Powell, I think it's a she, mentioned that before. She is still around as a consulting producer. I don't know how much that actually makes her available. She was a former co-exec, as was Matthew Negrete and Corey Reed, and they are still around as co-executive producers. In fact, I believe Corey Reed wrote the next episode. I have to check that, but we'll find out if I'm right. And Gimple himself co-wrote episode 5. So we know that he's still involved, but a lot can change when there's a new showrunner. I know also there are a couple of additional writers on staff. Another writer I know is still around from last season is Eddie Guzelian.
He was in Fear, wasn't he?
No.
No. I remember that name.
Yeah, he was a writer last season, and he actually, he's been around, actually. He was a showrunner of Power Rangers, I guess. Hmm. We'll talk more about that when his first episode comes out later in the season. But yeah, he's been around, even though he's not he's not high in the credits, you know, producing wise. I know that he's got some past experience, and yeah, so I know that there are a couple of additional writers. I know their episodes are coming up. Two new writers are among the credits this half season. I know the episode 7, the one that Michael Cudlitz directed, is written by a new writer, and I don't know which other one is coming up with, maybe episode 4. I don't know. We'll find out soon enough. But yeah, so there are definitely some changes in the staff, but I don't know if it's a full turnover. It's a partial turnover.
Yeah.
All right, next.
Dieta states, nurse/Dr. Enid cutting off arms. Angel, female symbol, angel, female symbol. So I have a new set of skills now. Smiley face, smiley face. So I guess Enid is a new happy medium now, and she's not the traitor as we always thought she was.
Oh, don't get me started with that. I never thought she was a traitor. I always got annoyed when people would say that she was a traitor. Next is Claire, and she says something, and I agree with Daryl Dixon. They have finally given him a bulky storyline that has been fun and intense to watch. I can feel the tension building towards Rick's departure. I know it's just started, but I have really been enjoying this season so much. The writing and acting is much better than last season. Even that kid, Henry, hasn't been annoying like I expected him to be. That's funny. Yeah, I totally agree with you, Claire, 100%. Daryl's character has been so much better. It's like light years better than past, I wouldn't even say last season, multiple seasons. So I agree with that. And yeah, even like Henry wasn't annoying. I kind of liked the little nod to Morgan with him taking care of that jerk face savior.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. I think between that and Enid, too, because they weren't really giving Eden much and Daryl. And if you think about it, Tara as well. So Tara wasn't really on the focus of last season either. It was more everybody else. So I'm glad. I think it's in the writing and building up of more characters within this season, which is what we need.
Yeah. All right. Awesome sauce. Mark, take it away.
Seeing Carol and Ezekiel together and taking in Henry as their own, being responsible for him, the parents. Carol actually has her own little family now, which is amazing. It's been so long, and she doesn't talk about her husband that had passed away, or Sophia. This was really about Rick telling Negan in the cell of his day. If you think about it, it starts off with Rick saying, oh, we haven't had many of these talks, but it ends in that. And then Negan giving his little quote of how he feels about the situation. But what had happened is Rick was just talking about his day, and it could be the good, the bad, and the ugly. And Negan will still make it about himself in the end. You know, you're just preparing the world for me. Which, I don't know. I think he might find it a little bit more fierce if he does get out.
Yeah, I mean, he is his usual, the world according to Negan. But, but I mean, it's kind of a, I don't know. In some ways, Negan kind of hit down below which kind of expect them to try to do.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think Rick was conveniently spinning things to the positive. He wasn't really focusing much on the bad, because there was some bad that happened. The tension between the saviors and the rest of them is palatable at this point.
Yeah. Well, like I said before, I agree with Lara about the writing. It's amazing.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was based upon the execution of the director and the actors as well. So everything came in and we're starting to see results, and that's all that we could hope for. I'm glad. The next up would be Justin's sudden attack in the dark at the end. That was something out of a horror movie scene. Set up the same way, and the shock value was immense. You know, you saw it coming, but it caught me off guard in the end, regardless.
All right. Well, I only wrote down one awesome sauce, and we've already talked about the log rolling scene, so I won't say too much, but I thought that was awesome as well. But I will add something that I didn't write down, and that had to do with the scenes that involved Tammy Rose and Earl, both with, I guess, with Jesus, you know, because Jesus is a good guy. Jesus will listen. And Jesus will look at things with a tempered mind. I did not use the Jesus thing last week. What was wrong with me?
You brought a tear to my eye with that noise, that music. It was wonderful.
But if I could borrow that for a second, I did really enjoy the scenes there with Tammy Rose. I feel her pain, but also the ties to Herschel and Earl. I liked that whole examination of that, and the fact that Maggie bent a little bit, and I think rightfully so, because you need Earl, not just because he is
he's a blacksmith.
Well, not just because he's a blacksmith, but I think that he is a redeemable character. You can tell how much regret he has for what he's done. And I think that if Maggie treats him with fairness and respect, I think that Earl will give the shirt off his back to her in the end. And I think Tammy will as well, although she might be a harder sell, but definitely, I think, like I say, if they're fair to Earl, I think Earl will pay that back tenfold, because he is, in many cases, a critical person in the success of not just the Hilltop, but all of the communities. They need someone who can, you know, bend steel and make things out of steel. And of course, you know, shoe the horses. Although I was listening to Biters from last week, and they were saying how some people don't believe in shoeing horses. So that's neither here nor there. But anyway, despite that, so many things that a blacksmith can do, can make weapons, can fashion, you know, all sorts of important tools and equipment that, you know, if you can't bend steel, you're reduced to wood and finding other parts. So anyway, so I agree with that. And all in all, I really enjoyed this episode. So in general, it deserves an awesome sauce. It's a great start, I think. And I didn't say I love last week's episode, but I love this one. This season so far has helped me restore my faith in this show. It's really good so far. I'm still worried about Rick, though. But yeah, I like what we're seeing so far. All right, let's move on to the week variety.
You're worthless and weak.
Really? Are you?
Dieta says, still trying to get the ingrate savers to cooperate and fly right. Kill them all!
Dieta has made no secret what she feels about the saviors. And right now, I'm right there with you, Dieta. At least for the bad ones.
Well, some of them. Arat, actually, her and Rosita had a little thing, interaction, in between when they were blowing up, what was it, that bridge or something?
Yeah.
With a bunch of boulders.
Not the bridge. I think...
It was a bunch of boulders and everything that was harming their way or getting somewhere across.
Right.
And Rosita mentioned something about, it's like, well, what you do... I'm not sure if I trust you, really, coming from the person who cut my face.
Yeah, I had forgotten about that. That was a rot, but yeah, it was a rot.
Yeah.
And what's her name? Laura, or as I heard her referred to on another podcast, barcode. I don't think that's a barcode that she has, but it's barcode-ish.
Yes.
I think it's tribal. But anyway, she's been a little more prominent than Arat, but
I was wondering what happened to Arat, because we haven't really seen much of her, even in last season, towards the end.
She is a regular on the show The Resident.
Ah.
That's okay. Why. So, you know, she's recurring on The Walking Dead, but she actually has a full-time regular role on The Resident. I'm not sure what her part is on that show, but I believe that she's a series regular on there.
That's cool.
All right. Cheryl is next, and she says, I did not need to see Anne accost Gabriel. It seemed inappropriate. Now, I'm assuming that's because he is a priest. Now, I mean, there's always the confusion there between Episcopal priest and Catholic priest. I mean, certainly if... Well, I don't know. I get it. I don't agree with you, but I get it. And I think someone else said something similar to this. So, of course, there must be something about Anne / Jadis and flirting grossly, because
she did it with Rick
all the time with Rick. and she was blatant about it, too.
Yeah, I want to sculpt you. Without those.
Well, if you remember, what was it, the season 7 finale, she said, like, she would lay down with Rick after or something like that, right in front of Michonne.
Michonne, yeah.
You know? So. All right. Next.
Claire says, I'm not crazy about the priest jumping in the sack with an out of nowheres. This show either has super duper show burn, or the characters sleep with each other right away after the showing almost no interest in each other.
That is really funny. You could tell, Claire, that I did not read forward. I had scrolled the page in such a way that I couldn't see the next contributor, but similar, different, I guess, but... But also, I think it's spot on. It is true. Like, either the characters take so long to hook up that it seems like it never happens, or they're bounce kawow wow.
Yeah, it was a role reversal, definitely, so that somebody else molests the priest. So,
oh, come on.
But he's Episcopalian, yes. So it's okay.
You're Catholic, right?
Yes.
So am I. So, anyway, don't hate us.
Exactly. Please don't.
All right, Mark, what do you have?
Well, my weak sauce would be, I thought it was a little weak how the logs just so happened to just smash the Zed heads as they rolled over them. It actually smashed the heads of the Zeds as the trees were rolling over them and smashing them like goo. What about the rest of their body, you know? You would think that it would just slow them down and not kill them completely. How did it just so happen to squish their heads? I don't know. That I know it was right for the writing and for the actual scene. It was awesome to see, but I don't know.
They were the heaviest logs ever found. So they were like, and they were at terminal velocity. So
I hope so. I don't know.
If they were at terminal velocity, that'd be a lot more destruction. But yeah, I mean, I said it earlier. I love this scene, but I have to concur with that little thing was a slightly exaggerated effect there, but I still love the effect, because that's something I had thought we would see by now and we hadn't seen. I guess the closest thing was the clothesline,
yeah,
from season 7. Okay, so the two that I've got, and I know that they've been said before on another podcast. Jason and Karen on Walking Dead Cast mentioned these two. So I'm partially stealing them, but I'm also giving them credit. And I was going to say at least one of these. So the one that I wasn't going to say, but as soon as I heard it, I said, yep. Why did the group, like after they, you know, they couldn't reach the second, what did they call that? The second one, to sound the
siren 2 or something like
that. Something like that. Anyway, when they couldn't reach siren 2, their reaction wasn't to contact the group that was working. Instead, they just ran over there. So why wouldn't they contact the group? Very good point. And I think Jason brought that up, or I don't know, maybe Karen did, but I had to steal that one. That was worth saying. And I'll talk about that a little bit, because I know some podcasters don't listen to other podcasts. They want to have their own opinion. I want to have the best opinion.
You got to search other people's thoughts and actually take them upon yourself and evaluate. That's how we should do it.
Yeah. The way I work, I was going to say this later, but the way that I work it is that I want to seek as much information about the episode as I can, both opinion and information about it, and present to you, the listener, what I think are the critical things to, understand and to criticize the you know, episode, both good and bad, on. And you know, some of the stuff I'm not going to come up with, but if I hear something really good that I think is worth saying, I'm going to mention it, and I'm going to try to give credit if I know that I didn't come up with it. So, and to that end, the second thing that I heard on Walking Dead Cast was, this makes no sense, why did they put that idiot savior, Justin, in charge of that distraction point in the first place? I mean, here's a jerk face that we know is unreliable or certainly a problem, and they give him a critical role like that? That is so dumb. And I have to agree. I think Karen came up with this one. It just stretches things far too far. So I couldn't think of, there were some other things that came up that have already been said that I would have written down, but those are two things that I wanted to say that hadn't been said on this podcast anyway. So now it is time for Sad Sauce, which has a couple of double meanings this week.
Cheryl says, did Aaron lose his arm in place of Rick? All I could think of was how his life will change with the baby. I think we got Aaron as the old man Rick in the comic. I saw that coming due to the pictures online with the bridge build. I was waiting for someone to lose an arm or hand. And honestly, Cheryl, I had this in my what sauce, but you took it away in your sad sauce. And I do agree with you. I saw the pictures, and I saw Ross Marquand with the long beard, the short hair, He had the same kind of sweatery kind of shirt that Rick wears in the comic book. And the first thing I thought when I saw those pictures, and, you know, those were in previews too, I thought right away, Aaron's going to lose his arm or hand. What is going on? And I counted down that night, and somebody yelled at me because they said spoilers, because I thought it was from the comic book, which it was not. So
I love that.
Sorry, Kristen. It wasn't from the comics. It was my speculation, just like, you know, Cheryl had, just the same. But we ended up with that. And I feel bad for that. What, baby Grace now has to have a one-armed dad?
Oh, jeez. Hadn't thought of that.
So, you know, he was talking about, you know, cleaning up her poo in the middle of the night with Daryl. And next thing you know, he loses his arm. Now, how he's going to clean up the poo with one arm, I don't know.
And he better not get that arm infected.
Yeah, poop. Exactly. The poop. So, yeah, I had the same feeling. But that was in my what sauce. But you clarified it as sad sauce, which it was sad about.
And this week's sad sauce is also called awe sauce. Awe in a different way. From Steve, he says, Anne mentioning Morgan and the camera showing all the couples. So, awe in a good way.
Very good.
Isn't that sweet?
Also, sick sauce from Lara. Aaron's arm amputation, that injury looks so realistic, but it was refreshing to see in an incident that would actually happen in the ZA that's not totally zombie related, which I agree with. It's something that was pretty much just accidental. Also, the amputation executed by a 16-year-old with primitive tools seemed to be terrible, but also something I could imagine happening prior to modern day medicine. Now I just super worried about Aaron's mortality on the show. How long do you think he'll be around if Ross Marquand has to have that arm CG'd in every scene he's in?
Yeah.
Which does make sense, but they have done that before with
Merle,
with Herschel.
Oh yeah.
And I think with Michael Rooker.
Yeah. Well, with Merle, I mean, he most of the time he was wearing that that saw arm or whatever. But
yeah,
I would think in sometimes, but yeah, definitely Herschel with his leg. We know that was CG'd a lot. Now, I would think an arm would be a little more difficult, but I know a lot of people, even Andrew Lincoln, wanted to have his arm taken off, and up until now, they didn't want to do it, but I think maybe it's easier to do than it used to be. I don't know if, you know, it could be a computer processing thing or special effects make it easier now than it used to be.
Yeah. They could extend Ross Marquand's hand a little bit and then shorten it in scenes.
Yeah.
You know,
it's 8 years from when the show started, so we know special effects and computing power have increased immensely since then. So,
well, except for that deer.
That deer. That is still one of the black marks on this show to me.
Yes.
It was like, you know, an intern did the deer. So, all right. Dieta says, even though I said Aaron's arm cutting was awesome, it was also sad sauce and gross. Yeah. And that whole thing, I didn't really talk about it because we've talked about it a lot, but I thought that that was one of the best scenes that the show's had in seasons. I loved that scene. So I didn't give it an awesome sauce, but I thought that whole thing was really effective and fantastic special effects on his arm. That looked real to me. I mean, it was gross and right in your face, but it looked real to me. Like, you know, his actual flesh and bone were crushed and So I got to give kudos for that.
Yeah, definitely. That was real prosthetics in that, and they did really good job on
Fantastic
it.
Fantastic job. It. Yeah.
Yeah. Kudos to them.
All right. Next.
Glennis says, it's going to be tough saying goodbye to Rick Grimes. We'll really miss the steely glare, the tilt of the head, that murder jacket, and that python being pointed at someone with heavy intent. He sure put that Jason Savior in his place.
Although someone else put him even more in his place later.
Was it Jason or Justin?
I think it was Justin.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Last is from Claire. She says, goodbye, Aaron's arm, with a frowny face. She says, that was tragic and unexpected. I was proud of Enid, though. And Claire, 100% agree with everything you said there. It was tragic and it was unexpected. I did not see that coming, but that doggone savior, it's those two jerk face saviors, the one that we see at the end, but then that other guy who was kind of goading him about like getting beat up by a 6-year-old or something when he was six, something like that. But he was the guy that left his post and dropped the log on Aaron. So he's not much better than Justin. All right. What do you have for sad sauce?
Well, everybody else had said it and I'm going to say it again. Aaron's arm. I was sad to see it go. The other would be Tammy visiting Earl in the prison and then Maggie coming in to see Earl after eavesdropping on them. The similarity between, you know, Earl and Maggie's dad, Herschel Green. Well, I miss Herschel. You know, we all do.
Well, especially right now, too.
Yeah, definitely. After the passing of Scott Wilson, you know, he's sorely missed. And I'm just glad we get to see one last snippet of him, hopefully in the coming episodes. So the next would be the talk between Michonne and Maggie about Herschel and the similarity between Earl and Herschel. Maggie sees something in Earl. And you said it before, I think it's redemption.
Yeah. I didn't put anything down for sad sauce. A lot of what has been said that you had said as well, I agree with. But one thing I'm just going to say off the top of my head that I think is kind of sad is that Rick was not getting what Daryl was trying to tell him. And I thought that was kind of sad. Because, you know, Rick is kind of looking at things from the Carl perspective and not really being pragmatic like he should be. And, you know, he's trying to stick to the plan when, he needs to make some concessions and, because, you know, the saviors, there are going to be some of the saviors that are going to fall in line. But there's also, it's totally expected that some of them are not going to fall in line.
Yeah, it's two different worlds. Somebody coming from an idealistic thought, which would be Rick, and then Daryl, who's coming from a realistic thought of what's going on.
Yeah.
And those two worlds are clashing at this point, and you have two brothers at the opposite ends of the spectrum.
Yeah,
coming and clashing, but one's trying to provoke some sort of influence on the other. And I think it's more Daryl at this point trying to say, hey, something's going on and you're not thinking realistically, you're thinking idealistically. And he didn't want to say, hey, you're living in the dream of a kid that passed away, which is your son, which I don't think Daryl would actually say because he loves the man so much. So.
And now it's time for What Sauce.
What?
Glennis says, Anne and Gabriel not too sure what to think of that duo being together. Yeah, I agree.
That seems a common thing, at least. It seems to be a common thing because Dieta also says, Jadis and Father Gabriel? Wow, didn't see that coming. A little nookie in the woods. Father Gabriel, aren't you supposed to be on watch? That's got some some side eye, I guess.
The eyes watching him and thinking about the frogs and how they're cricketing and Jadis wanting to jump Father Gabriel. Anyhow.
She also adds, what did Jadis see in the sky when she was on watch? I thought the group was about to get attacked. Then the show went off. I believe that was the helicopter.
Yeah, I do so as well. I think we're probably going to get some information about that next episode.
Well, it's definitely coming. It has to be. All right, what you got for what sauce?
What about that interaction with Rick and Eugene in the beginning? Wow. Like, nothing happened at all? I wish we had a little backstory of what happened when everything came together after, you know, Negan got sliced in the neck, everybody took over, Rick was there. It's as if, like, Eugene was embraced again. Oh, give me a hug. We're here together. Nothing happened. And I love you, man. It was just, like, very curious. I know it's a year and a half later, and there's some sort of backstory we're not getting, and I understand this is a new beginning, but it was kind of like, wait, you were just there last season, and you were with Negan, you were on a flatbed truck, you had Sasha in a coffin, and you would say, I am Negan, and then Rick just, like, slapping his face, going, he knew who he was, like, being a coward. So where did that all happen? You know, when did that change? So there's a lot of things that are still left out from between last season and this season that still irks me, but that's part of it. The next would be the letters that were talked about from Georgie and how Georgie apparently wants Maggie there in her community. Is this how Maggie / you know, Miss Lauren Cohan leaves the show? Inquiring minds want to know. Yeah, it's a trap.
It's a trap.
See, they are not connected. They are separate sound effects. I just usually play them together.
Yes, but it is a trap. I don't know. It just sounds weird that it's like, you know, her and Jesus talking and, oh, you haven't had one of those letters in months, as she's playing with little Herschel. And, oh, is Georgie still trying to convince you? Oh, the twins brought a new letter for you. And she goes, oh, I haven't had one in a couple of months. Is she trying to convince you to come back with her to her community? Is this fortuitous? Is this something that we're going to see? Is this something that's going to come up? Is this the helicopter? What's going on? It's kind of like why I put it in the what sauce. So,
yeah, it was a little manufactured, I think. Sort of ham-fisted in there to put in there, not so delicately, because that's going to come into play later in the season.
Yeah.
It was pretty obvious to me that it was placed there intentionally.
Yeah.
Because it was so out of left field.
It was, definitely. It was one of those things. We always wondered and pondered it, but they just threw that in there casually, which was really interesting. And then, which leads me to, what is with that helicopter and Anne / Jadis? I want answers next episode. Gosh, golly gee, darn it. And I'm sure we're going to get some.
She is a teacher and a pilot. I don't think so. All right. Well, my what sauce is, who got, did he have a hair bun or did he just have a ponytail? I put
ponytail. Yeah. Okay.
I said hair bun savior, but I think it was actually Jesus that had a hair bun, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah. He has the hair bun.
Yeah. Because, you know, Jesus has a nice hair bun. Anyway. I'm going to overuse that now. But Anyway, ponytail savior Justin, who got him, and does this also explain the missing saviors? To the second question, I think explain is a little overuse there, but I think that it does suggest that the other saviors are being taken slash killed slash whatever. And I have to think that they're involved. But the question that I've got, of course, is who done it? I think some sound effects are going to get overused.
Well, maybe it was Dwight.
Well,
we haven't seen him or heard about him. Just a theory of mine about what is to come with the new big bad. And I will elaborate on my other notes.
It could be either the big bad, and that's where I have been leaning. But Dwight is a possibility. Now, could Dwight be involved with the big bad?
I think so, but we will continue on later.
If he is, why would he be doing that? I mean,
he knows the saviors, and Justin was one of the saviors, and he probably saw him as somebody who was not compliant.
So taking out the ne'er-do-wells?
So, yeah, exactly. Take out all the people who are very obstinate.
Yeah.
To keep everybody else in line.
But if that's the case, he's also hurting the Hilltop and anyone who's like waiting for the ethanol. So, you know, that, I don't know. I tend to think, I mean, it could be Dwight. I have to think it's big bad because, like I say, it doesn't explain the lack of the ethanol. I mean, that seems to be gone. There's, and it seems like there's no trace of it. And, yeah. So
I don't think they're drinking it though.
It's funny how ethanol has suddenly become a plot point in both Fear the Walking Shows. Dead and The Walking Dead. Never been mentioned in, you know, 8 years. And then all of a sudden ethanol is like the most valued commodity.
Somebody saw a read a survival's manual and thought, oh, this could happen. Oh, wait, we could use this.
You know what it reeks of? It reeks of Gimple reading something about ethanol. And he's like, hey, guys, I think we should bring up in the story about the need for ethanol. We could make fuel with ethanol.
Angela, put this in your episode.
Yeah. I'll get the other guys to put that in the episode too. Anyway, funny. All right. Well, now it's time for regular feedback.
We can talk about it.
Done talking. Time to listen.
All right. And here is a voicemail from Steve. Thank you, Steve, in advance.
Hey, Brian and Mark, it's Steve. Just to have a little bit of feedback for this week's episode, The Bridge. And I don't know if you can tell, but I don't read the other Facebook post usually before I post. So I just wanted to bring that up. I don't know, because I honestly right now don't have any clue if somebody said the things I've said already in the Facebook group. So I thought it was interesting. I wonder if that deal with the person with the fingers amputated at the beginning of the show was foreshadowing, or if there's something more going on there. I sent that to Walking Dead cast as well, but the communities are divided, but it seems like they're trying to come together. Are they trying to bring them together like states, do you think? Or like under one leader? Or do you think it's going to be like fiefdoms with three different leaders? I don't know, but they're divided for sure. Loved all the couples, Anne and Gabriel and all of them, but it does make me concerned about the future of those couples, because we know that doesn't last long. It's interesting. They're still in contact with Georgie and the Commonwealth. And I hope they don't use Maggie ordering Gregory's death as the reason for her leaving the show or leaving the community. Like she has some sort of guilt ridden thing about wanting not being able to stay there or something. I hope it's something different. I hope they don't use that because they use that. That was similar with what Carl put in his letter. And plus I don't want to see that from Maggie. I don't want to see that indecision. I want to see her. We've seen her be very decisive, but yet she asked several people in this episode, do you think I made the right choice? And it's almost like she's wanting someone to tell her you were wrong and so that she can feel guilty about it. Other than that, I really don't have much else. I don't understand why they trusted that guy, Justin, whether that was Carol's call or not, why they trusted him to actually lead those walkers away after what they had seen from him. That just seems a little strange to me, and I hope Carol gives some sort of explanation about why he was the one chosen to do that. Can't wait to hear what you guys thought. Talk to you later.
Yeah. Why Justin indeed. And we talked about that. And, you know, I mentioned that I heard that on another podcast. It doesn't make sense. That's the one really weak part of the story. I mean, if they had, they could have explained it away with, say, another savior getting taken away. It didn't have to be Justin. It could have been just another savior vanishing, right?
Yeah.
And that would have, of course, maybe that was something they wanted Justin to do, but I don't know. It's like they
needed a fall guy. It seemed like, you know, a scapegoat. So, if he's dead, then somebody else. So somebody's been watching, obviously.
Yeah.
And they killed Justin knowing that he caused a stir between the communities.
Right.
So at the very end, we see him and he recognizes the person that shoots him or whatever it is that happens to him.
Certainly seemed that way.
So it could be that maybe the people that disappeared, and this was in my notes, and I won't continue on my notes regarding this, but my notes stated that maybe somebody took the skin of those particular people that were dispatched, that were saviors, that were bringing the ethanol to Hilltop, put those skins on their bodies to look like those people, going, hey, what are you doing here? And typical horror fashion, they dispatch Justin. And the only way they were able to get a drop on him was that he recognized the person. He would have been, you know, taken aback if it was somebody else that he didn't know. So with this person he recognized, it was easier for them just to get rid of him. So I think it was to create a stir within the communities, and they had to have been watching for some time. So that there was my theory with Dwight being part of, quote unquote, spoilers, the Whisperers, and him knowing who Justin is and each of the communities and who he's watching.
Well, I'll say that several things you said there are kind of spoilery, like, for example, using the skin of one of the saviors.
I said spoilery.
I know. And that is a strategy that we will most likely be seeing in the coming episodes. And I really want to see what that's going to look like. But yeah, in the dark, I would think that would potentially be something that could fool someone. But my goodness,
yeah,
I can only imagine what this is going to look like when they show it. So, a couple things I wanted to touch base on. It definitely seems like the sanctuary is not an equal partner in this whole thing. It's like the four other communities, and then the sanctuary is, like, as Rick said, being protected. And, you know, I mean, that probably has something to do with the resentment on some of the saviors. It's kind of a catch 22. You can't expect them to act like they're fully you know, invested in this if you're not going to give them a stake in it. And trust obviously is not going to be there, but, you know, it's one of those things. It's like, if they really want them to be a part of the community, I think at some point they're going to have to, and I don't know if that the point is now, but I'm just saying that at some point you are going to have to take the, you're going to have to give the sanctuary a chance to defend themselves. And if this is happening, what's happening, if they're like, you know, doing a fuel run and something happens and they don't have a chance to defend themselves, I mean, what else do you expect? The ethanol, you know, something's going to happen. And if they can't defend themselves in a herd or whatnot, they're just asking for this kind of thing to happen, right?
Mm.
So something else Steve said had to do about Maggie, you know, hoping for someone to say you were wrong. I didn't get that impression. It seems like Maggie is not really caring, but at the same time, I think that she had a problem that hesitation wasn't going to solve. I mean, the problem of them needing a blacksmith wasn't going to go away. And I think that she really needed to hear from Jesus, who, you know, is very quiet and doesn't usually, you know, speak his mind, for him to say something. And of course, you know, this comes out earlier in that conversation with Michonne, that, you know, she has to practically coax out of him what he thinks. And now the guilt and Negan, it's a funny thing because Michonne is out there talking about a charter and, you know, how the communities have to act with a certain, you know, code of conduct. But at the same time, they put Negan in prison without really having, I don't think there was a consensus there. He acted alone on that. You know, I don't know if it's, we know Maggie wouldn't agree. I doubt the Oceanside would have agreed. And I doubt Ezekiel would have agreed with that. So, you know, Rick acted alone on this. So it's kind of funny with Michonne, of course. So it is a little presumptuous for them to think that, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. Then the whole thing about why Justin, indeed, that was the plot point. I think that was the weakest. It just didn't make sense for them to pick Justin to have that critical
end
role there. Yeah.
Yeah, I think we'll see what comes of it next episode, and it's only going to further the actual drama in the show. We won't know probably, I would say, by episode 6,
yeah,
what had happened and what really happened.
Yeah.
So I would say let's hold tight and keep on watching.
Yeah. All right. So that's it for the voicemail. Steve, again, I must give you the Showcase Award. I think this is like 3 in a row. Thank you, Steve, for all of your contributions to the show. We will definitely have you on as a guest coming up, so we'll figure that out.
Yeah, hopefully sometime soon.
Yeah.
Currently, we're on a break for Panels to Pixels. We're catching up everybody else out there. This is not a promotion. I'm just stating. uploading a lot of stuff. So right now you got a full Jessica Jones series. You're going to have a full Luke Cage. And when we come back, I would say come after October, we're going to be fresh and new. So you'll hear Steve and myself completely with the new series.
But you won't have a fresh season to go through of Iron Fist.
Oh, hell no. Well, I won't go there.
Yeah. I know that you didn't care for that show, but it's been canceled.
Yes, it has.
Yeah.
No spoilers, everybody. Yeah, Iron Fist was canceled.
Yeah. Anyway,
we should move on with our own right now.
Yes.
So Brenda has some feedback as well. In my humble opinion, this episode was even better than last week's. I still think / hope that the mysterious helicopter will have something to do with Rick's leaving. Just a thought. Which is true. I do feel that somebody's going to fly away on a jet plane. I don't know when I'll be back again. I'm starting to think it's more Maggie than it is Rick, but Brenda, if you think it's Rick, that would be awesome, because that would mean that Rick could come back.
Yeah.
The consensus of everybody who I've talked to, and I'm just talking water cooler talk, people I work with, friends of mine, my friend Susan, my family, my niece, everybody who watches the show, even my own brother, Scott Kirkman, will state, we don't think Rick is coming back. And it's really sad to think that, but I'm hoping that they do come up with something. And this is all just a ruse, but everybody's saying that with the whole, this is Rick's final season or last episodes. I'm hoping that they are just pulling the wool over our faces and say, you know, it's like at the very end, haha, no, he can come back and it would be awesome.
I would like to see him come back, but in terms of I don't want them to, you know, make this like a dumpster moment.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we don't want that. If it's done tastefully, it would be great. They didn't state, oh, this will be his last episode this season.
Yeah.
You know, then we would understand. But, you know, we know that Andrew Lincoln is going to be shadowing directors and doing things kind of like, who was it from Star Trek Next Generation? Shadowing
Jonathan people. Frakes.
Jonathan Frakes did that. And he did that and wound up directing a bunch, but directing things that he was in as well, too. Mm. But
and he wasn't alone in that. There were several actors from Star Trek that directed episodes, both Next Generation, but also Voyager and
yes.
Deep Space Nine. And several actors from those shows directed. And, you know.
And Michael Cutlitz is doing an episode of The Walking Dead soon, yeah. too.
I mean, so. The funny thing, the thing that makes me pause is that Andrew Lincoln also said that
he's not finished with Rick Grimes.
He's not finished with Rick Grimes, yeah. So what does that mean exactly? Like, for example, we don't know this, but we've speculated about this, like, possible movie or miniseries or limited series about Negan. I could see Rick being a part of that, you know, playing some secondary role if they talk about the whole war from a Negan perspective at some point, but would be near the end of the of that run. But if they, you know, cover Negan in a
different perspective
origin story, yeah. Then
I heard something about them wanting to do an origin story of Negan.
Yeah.
Which would give Jeffrey Dean Morgan, a whole new spotlight. And then if they did something sidebarred as far as like an offshoot,
right.
Kind of like what they did with the books. I don't know if you ever saw the books that they had about the governor, and it was called the something about Woodbury.
Right. Yeah. I have a couple of those books.
Yeah, they could actually do something like that in a movie or a short story or webisode or what have you, and just have Andrew just pop in. I'm sure he doesn't want to do it long term because something like that would probably endure him for like more than 2 months or something like that.
Yeah, but something that's a good point. If they did a governor story like the novels and, you know, kind of approached the story of like an origin story of the governor. I think that would be really interesting to do. And that would be another thing where, you know, Rick could come back in at an earlier stage. I imagine that they would somehow not show Carl unless they recast the role of Carl. But, you know, Carl was pretty much, you know, at the prison the whole time. He wasn't like out on missions like he was later. So I suppose that they could get away with no Carl. But anyway, I could definitely see. What were you going to say?
Oh, he couldn't stay in the house.
Well, that's true. But I could see some kind of origin story of like an earlier prison era Rick that would come into a story about the governor. You know, maybe like he might be a bit player or, you know, come in almost as a cameo at the end. But there are all sorts of stories that could be told that could involve Rick at a different phase of his character.
Yeah. They could always do radio dramas if they wanted.
I mean, they could also do a story of like Rick in the hospital.
He wouldn't have to do anything. He didn't even have to speak.
He would just sit there in the bed, just laying there. And there's all sorts of things that they could do. But I have to think that Rick would come back from time to time, you know, in flashbacks or dream sequences or whatever. So he may never be back in a full-time role. But, I mean, Rick, like, if something were to happen to Daryl or Michonne or any number of characters, I could see Rick kind of coming back, much like several characters did when Tyrese was dying. You know?
Well, I think that's what this whole talk about Scott Wilson.
Yeah.
Sinequa Martin Green coming back and
John Bernthal too.
Exactly. I think these are just visions of something that's coming on, and I really don't want the worst, but you know.
Yeah.
We'll see. Let's just keep walking, and we're walkers, and we'll do this, and we'll just watch as we normally do.
And keep watching the show, unlike some people, which we'll get to shortly. Okay, well, next is from Todd, and he says, "So I really don't want it to be true, but I have a strong feeling they are gearing up to kill off King Ezekiel's character. On the other hand, I am really glad for Gabriel and Anne, though their happiness may not bode well for the show either. Who do you think that Rebel Savior was surprised by at the end? I didn't rewatch the last season, but could Dwight still be around somewhere?" Well, I mean, we talked about this a little bit. So one thing I wrote here in the notes that I didn't say earlier is we know that there's another group of characters that are going to be joining the show. Most notably is a character from the show or from the comic book called Magna. Mm-hmm. Could it be Magna and her people?
No.
Okay. I don't know.
I don't think so. They weren't very malicious in the comic like okay. that. Do you want to hear another theory?
I will just say before you give that theory that I am also concerned about Ezekiel. It's kind of like, you know, it's a trope.
Yeah, he found happiness. Now he's going to lose his head.
Right. And I wonder about Anne as well, because for the same reason, if we're going to see a number of characters being killed off, if things play out like they do in the comic book, I know that a number of characters die when the Whisperers are first revealed. Mm-hmm. And suddenly a bunch of characters are showing a very high probability of being in danger, at least. You know, anyone who's recently paired off, you know. So, I mean, it could be Ezekiel, could be Carol, you know. Oh, God, I would hate that to be. But Anne/Jadis, I mean, or even Gabriel, you know, I mean, those two characters.
Nah, I don't really think Gabriel.
I'll tell you one character who I think is absolutely safe at this point, and that is Aaron. I don't think that they would, you know, have him lose his arm and then, you know, kill him off in a few episodes.
He's a glutton for punishment at this point.
Yeah, so I think he's safe, but as far as other characters, I can't say that. I think there's a very good possibility.
All right.
That we're going to get others.
Yeah, well, my theory, and you people could skip ahead for about 2 minutes. We were talking about Justin earlier, and we were talking about the whispers, possibly me saying Dwight possibly putting on a skin and all that good stuff. Well, we don't know much about Anne Jadis. Maybe it was Anne that had done that to Justin for her, I don't know, survival in some way. Maybe she has a pact. We don't know who she was talking to, where that helicopter was. Apparently she knew about the helicopter, especially when she entrapped Negan. So we don't know. So is she in cahoots with those people, or is she supplying people for these people with the helicopter, or what's going on? We don't know. But
there's a conspiracy out there.
You know, exactly.
It's a conspiracy. A C-O-N
conspiracy.
Exactly. So my feeling is, I don't know, maybe Anne is the one that was doing that?
Well, that would be interesting. Although, is that possible? Could she be essentially in two places at once?
Who knows? You know. She was with Gabriel playing and listening to the frogs at one point, and then we see Justin in the dark getting killed.
Yeah.
So, who knows?
All right, next.
Cheryl says, Aaron telling Daryl he would make a good father someday. Actually, that is more of an aw sauce.
Oh, you mean an aw sauce? Yeah.
Exactly. Also, I like Maggie taking the time, finally, to listen to Earl's story and realize that, you know, that could have been Herschel. And Brett Butler, who is Tammy Rose, has been fabulous.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. I didn't know that she had been cast in season 9 until I saw her name in the credits last week. But I said last episode that I've always liked her, especially, you know, from Grace Under Fire. That was a show that I watched every week. And yeah, so she's been great. And I think the John Finn, who plays Earl, he's been great. They're great additions to the show. I really am liking that dynamic. I hope that she can forgive Maggie, and, you know, maybe Earl will help her to do that. And, you know, I made a comment about it was kind of awkward how she went from blaming Maggie to blaming the saviors. Had nothing to do with her role or her character or whatever. It was the way it was written. It was a little odd. Had nothing to do with her performance, because she's hitting it out of the park. I really, really, really like her in this role.
Yeah, definitely. She was really good at it.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to see, how this plays out, whether or not, you know, she becomes, you know, a more permanent cast member. We'll see. So, all right. Next is from Glennis. She says, surely the whispers are behind the disappearing saviors, as I don't think the saviors would off one of their own to turn the saviors against the survivors. They're not that conniving, are they? No, I don't think they are. The Justin Savior knew the person who surprised him on the road, so just wondering if the Whisperers positioned that person in place in order to trap Justin. I think he's dead, though, not just knocked out. I'll react to this, and I'll say, I think you're right. I think he is dead. I do think it's the Whisperers. The theory you had of them taking the body of one of the other Saviors makes a lot of sense. So I think you've got something there. I hadn't thought of that.
He's dead, Jim.
He's dead, Jim. Yes.
He's dead, Jim.
Enid did a fine job with Aaron's amputation, even with the tech med manual in tow. But it's scary that she's now a doctor of sorts, as docs don't last long in the TWD. There can only be one.
Yeah, yes. That is true. That not many, they don't last that long. So is Enid on the list?
And it is so true. It's like as soon as one doctor comes in, another seems to leave. And
please don't say Sadiq's gonna go and then eat it. We're left with Enid.
Yeah, and I don't think that she's a doctor at this point. I mean, nurse practitioner maybe, but doctor, mind
she's
you,
barely a June.
Yeah, she's barely a June, exactly. Certainly not what was it, something that Kyle said. And by the way, I didn't mention it early on. Kyle, he'll be back at some point to come on, but he's got stuff going on right now. So
yeah, he's got tea and bananas going on.
Yeah, he's working on the podcast. No, he's not. He's not, but he'll come back at some point in the season as a guest. He's not going to be on every episode, so He could be if he wanted to, but he's got other things going on. We totally understand. One more point from Glynis. She says, with all the happy, loving couples, Rick Michonne, Ezekiel and Carol, Jerry and Nabila, and now Anne and Gabriel, I'm feeling scared or at least wary about the fates of these characters, as one cannot be happy for long in TWD land. Yeah, I mean, look at that for a second. We know Rick is, supposedly leaving the show. We talked about Ezekiel and Carol and Gabriel. We did not talk about Jerry and Nabila. And I don't know. I mean, we've hardly gotten to know Nabila at this point. She's kind of been around, but, she hasn't had a very big role in the show. So, yeah, they could kill off Nabila. Certainly, if they killed off Jerry, a lot of people would be pretty upset. But I have to agree, this is the kind of thing that I worry about some of those characters, especially if there's some big kill off that could be coming. We have no inside knowledge of it. We only know things that we've heard in the comics / something that our Kirkman not by birth, even though I'm sure we'll do an ancestry test and find out that
only if he complies.
Mark is like secretly Robert Kirkman's brother.
Oh my God, that'll make my mother unhappy.
I imagine so. All right, well, let's move on.
Dieta says, why are the Saviors scared of walkers? When they were under Negan's reign, I'm quite sure they knew how to kill them. Poor Aaron lost an arm due to their negligence. First, the guy didn't set the siren off like he was supposed to, but wait, wasn't he the same guy who got knocked down by Carl 2.0? Can't think of his name. Yeah, that was Henry. Why would our group trust him to set the siren off after Daryl and Carl 2.0 just beat him down? Now, Aaron has lost his hand / arm. Sad face, frowny face. Yeah, that guy is a piece of work and nobody likes him. And apparently Daryl doesn't, and neither did Henry. I do agree. And why would they put him on that guard duty? She continues on. Maggie's scenes are always good. She is definitely the leader they need at Hilltop, and she is still getting letters from Shaggy and the gang. Smiley face, Shaggy, Shaggy and the gang.
And the gang, that's funny.
Maybe that's how they write her stuff off. She decided to join the mystery lady and her sidekicks delivering New World Order and collecting albums. Oh, the angel and the female emojis going on. That's pretty funny. That's nice. I love that. Rick talking to Negan about the New World is useless. Clearly, he has not seen the error of his ways. Rick, stop wasting your time and let Negan starve to death, which a lot of people want. And I know a lot of people that want Negan to starve to death and just go away. It's like a virus. And then she continues on stating, Carol, let the king put a ring on it. Yes, so happy for them. Hopefully we get to see this relationship blossoming if they don't kill him first. Hopefully they won't. Jeez. I love Ezekiel. I cannot live without Ezekiel at this point. He's a saving grace in this show, and I love him. And Jerry, I love those two from the kingdom.
Yeah, I agree. So do I. And I wasn't a big Ezekiel fan at first. I remember that first episode, I thought that he was way over the top, and it was only when he finally talked to Carol that I kind of got him.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, those two, I do not want to lose either of them, but I am worried that we will lose.
Yeah, I do too. The funny thing was, in comparison to comic book Ezekiel and to TV show Ezekiel, I always thought when I first saw the Ezekiel in the comic book, he was too, I don't know, it was too Shakespearean, too determined, too serious. Whereas the Ezekiel that Kari Payton gives us is a little lighthearted, understanding, freely giving, happy-go-lucky, somebody that you just want to hang out and have a beer with, snuggle up with, and if Shiva were there, just like cuddle up with Shiva with.
Yeah.
The comic book one was too stiff.
Really?
Yeah. And that's what I got out of the comic book Ezekiel. So I was glad we got Kari Payton. I love the character. I love how he brings it to the table. I don't know. Maybe it's because every time I hear his voice, I hear Cyborg from Teen Titans Go, and he's a happy-go-lucky person. And every time you meet Kari Payton, he's such a nice guy and so happy. But honestly, I love him, and I don't want to see him go. So hopefully more Ezekiel, please, more Ezekiel.
Yeah.
She also continues on stating, who is in the woods knocking people down and out, and where are all these missing saviors? Are they the ones hiding in the woods plotting an attack on the New World Order? Overall descent episode? Interesting. Possibly deteriorating of the communities, but I don't think so. I really think it's like what we're starting to see is somebody starting to stir up the trouble between the communities, and it's an outsider.
And Mark, I'm going to leave this in, but it's overall decent episode, not descent.
Oh, whoops.
Whoopsie. It is an outtake that is not an outtake this time, so.
Okay.
You kept talking. It was like there was no way to stop. So
stop it, man.
Stop it. Anyway. and in the spirit of getting these things out, I'm gonna try to edit a little less, because it's good to get them out early.
And bloopers are fun.
All right, so let's move on to our own notes. And neither of us have a lot of stuff, but what do you have?
What is up with Justin's death? Did Dwight do it? I know we covered it before, but it's just a speculation here. And I mentioned before, spoilers, skip ahead about, you know, a minute, Jadis possibly intervening. But
interesting.
That was it. You know, we spoke about it before.
Well, I wonder, too. We don't know that he's, in fact, dead, but it's safe to assume that he's dead. And quite honestly, he should be dead. He deserves, he's kind of a despicable character who kind of deserves whatever comes to him. But a couple things that I wanted to point out, or, you know, observations to make. I noticed that the previously on The Walking Dead was back. We had that first episode that really didn't do that. It's kind of like a summary of what had come before it. But unlike past seasons, the character or the voice that we hear that says previously on The Walking Dead was in fact Andrew Lincoln in the voice of Rick. And that's definitely a first. We've never had a character do that. So,
yeah, I loved it.
Yeah, I was very surprised by it, and I kind of loved it too. So kudos to Angela Kang. I wonder, in fact, if
he's executive producer now.
Maybe, but you never know. I mean, this could be rotated. Like, so we could hear a number of characters do this.
Like, or Michonne. Like Michonne, or Maggie.
Or Maggie, or Daryl. Or so it could rotate. I imagine that Negan would say it with a certain flair.
They've done this with other shows, too, haven't
sure.
they?
Yeah, yeah, they definitely have.
Yeah.
So they could spin it all sorts of different ways. Or it could be Rick Grimes that could be, you know, in the 17 seasons of The Walking Dead. we'll still hear Rick Grimes say previously on The Walking Dead, I gotta find Morgan. Anyway.
Well, instead of the guy who goes previously on The Walking Dead.
Yeah. Who yeah. is now no longer, you know,
with us.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that voice, though.
Yeah.
I miss that voice.
Yeah. One thing that I thought could have been done better, and it was just a question of like having a couple of extra words. Rick says to Negan, today was day 35. And you're kind of like, day 35 of what? And it's implied, or at least, you know, you could surmise that it had to do with the bridge project. But I think it was enough to throw you off. But it's kind of funny, and I heard this mentioned on a couple of other podcasts, that 35 days have already passed in this season, and probably less than 35 days had occurred between season 7 and 8. You know, so, and I know, like, season 6, the first half of season 6, I think, or the first 9 episodes of season 6, I think, happened within a couple of days of each other.
Or 35 days without an incident, like in the Incredible Hulk with Edward Norton.
Anyway, and I thought of the trailer in that scene, you know, that where Rick says, you know, or Daryl says something like, you know, are we on the same side? And Rick says, you tell me. Well, they made it sound like the two were against each other, but it was clear that Daryl was speaking about the Saviors being on their side. But I really enjoyed the fact that Daryl actually said something. He didn't just grunt or whatever. He said, I've been trying to tell you that. And I appreciated that. Like, I think finally Angela Kang is giving Daryl a voice. Maybe she's forced to give him a voice because Rick is leaving. But I said this last week. It's like, did Gimple have problems writing for that character for some reason? We don't know.
Yeah, it's kind of odd, too, when he talks about the saviors like that.
Yeah.
But let's flash back to the prison. And we saw Oscar and who was the other one? The redheaded Axel. Guy. Axel and them. And when Rick was saying how they have their own cell, they have their own way. He goes, and then he goes, oh, you're siding with them? He goes, oh, hell no. I'd be inside with them if the tides would turn. Now the tides have turned where Daryl is actually looking out for those that did bad against them and trying to help them, which is odd because before he was just like, oh, screw them. It's like, oh, I could have been one of them.
Mm.
And now he's like looking out for them, but he's also trying to incorporate them into the community.
Yeah.
And Rick's not starting to see that. Rick's not seeing the realism of what's going on.
Right.
Being, Rick's only seeing the idealistic thought of what Carl wanted. And then Daryl's being the realistic thought pattern of what's going on overall.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I saw that whole little transition in this episode as well.
Yeah. And I really like that. And it's like I said, I think at some point, and maybe, you know, an external threat will unite the factions. But so far, the Saviors are an unequal partner at this. And
they're not holding their own ground.
Yeah. Well, on a lot of things. Like,
yeah.
I think we mentioned last week that, you know, why wouldn't they just move if things are not working well at the sanctuary? But also, they've still got that whole entitled attitude, I think, that they got because Negan kind of taught them that they were going to take, and they are still acting like that. That probably explains what we saw last week with the we're still Negan sign or whatever graffiti. But I think that the Saviors need to be better integrated, and hopefully that'll happen. Hopefully it won't be like another little war. I don't really want to see that.
Well, Civil War didn't last that long in the comic books before the Whisperer showed. So,
okay.
That's not a spoiler, everybody, but it really didn't,
like, to me, dude.
Not really. It wasn't really that long. You know, if you look about six issues and then it goes in, so it's really not that many in comparison to a show. So obviously there were some problems, but I think it brings the group together in some way.
Yeah.
And how it happens, I don't know. That's the one thing that is clueless to me. It's like, how does this really start?
Yeah. I'm sorry this happened to you. Of course, that was something that Rick said to the bicycle girl.
Yes.
You know, we get these little call outs, but, and of course, we know that Rick's arm was cut off by the governor. The circumstances of Aaron losing his arm are much different than Rick, but like you said, he's got more of the Rick persona at this point. Now, have there been any characters that have lost a limb from something like this?
Oh,
like not a zombie bite, but something, you know, like an accident that we've seen in the comic book?
Not that I remember off the top of my head. My niece is the perfect one for this because she read everything and she remembers everything. She's got such a great memory on this. But if you look at the governor had a lot of stuff. He was missing an arm himself.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Didn't he lose his arm to Michonne?
I think so. And from what I remember. And
maybe more.
Yeah. His eye. And, you know. Right.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah. There was a whole lot of things going on at that time, too. You know, he was like a walking dismembered person at one point. Yeah. If you think about it. But, you know, I'm hoping and wanting the best for Aaron and the coming episodes and the coming seasons. You know, I love the character. Ross Marquand is, you know, by far one of my favorite characters on the show.
Yeah. Well, the other things that I had in the notes, we've already talked about. So we got one more piece of feedback that I'm going to include. It's more of a general feedback, and that is from Todd.
So Todd says, how's this theory to rest your noggin on about Rick leaving? I say again, this is just a personal theory. He wakes up from his coma, and the whole thing has been a coma dream, but we find out that everyone in the show has actually been people visiting and talking to Rick in his hospital room while he was in this coma. Hospital workers, possibly other fellow police officers that work with Rick, Maggie actually being his sister, Negan or Jesus actually being his brother in this other world. Also, though maybe Daryl or Shane is also in a coma in a nearby hospital room having the same dream. And that's how we still have the show going back into the dream world of one of these other coma patients. Like kind of a Life on Mars style meets a kind of Lost. But this is just a theory. Wow. That was a lot. And on top of that, that is definitely a dream kind of thought. I like it. It also plays off of issue number 75 of The Walking Dead.
I know what you're thinking of.
And when Robert decided to create this wonderful comic book that we have a TV show based upon, the people that he came to that were going to give him his comic book of his dreams to do on his own asked him, hey, is there going to be something cool in it, like aliens, or what's the outcome of this? Do aliens create this virus? And well, an issue, he goes, yeah. And that's how he got it. And after like about 25 issues, and the issues have been selling out like crazy, they're like, so what's going on with that aliens thing? And he was like, it's coming. And let alone this, each issue was selling out like crazy. So come issue 75, or I think it was 25, it was in the reader's poll, and somebody had asked him about that, saying, hey, are we going to see aliens in this? Well, what does Robert do but write a colored concept piece in the actual comic book? Now, mind you, the comic book is all black and white. And at the very end, you see Rick transported to a spaceship, and you see Lori, you see Shane, everybody in color, and you see aliens. And it was a whole aliens conspiracy. Now, mind you, it's a small snippet. And I thought that it was such a funny little section. I have two copies of this, and they're hard to come by. And I love it, and I still love it to this day. And I wish they would have done some sort of little snippet like this in the show just to fool around with people for the fun of it. You would think Greg Nicotero would jump in on this in a heartbeat. Yeah. But I really don't think that's the case. It's not going to be a Sane Elsewhere ending the person, you know, you have an autistic or mentally retarded person, or somebody who is mentally incapable, I should say, to be politically correct, looking in a snow globe of the hospital and imagining all this whole world in their own mind.
Yeah, or the season of Dallas that ended up being a dream or something. Like, I don't know. It's a novel theory, and you know, but it's not something I want to see.
Yeah,
I don't want to find out after watching this show for years and years and years that the whole thing was just, you know, a dream. Because all that does is invalidate everything we've seen. So, you know, but hey, it's also like sort of like a Lost kind of ending, and no, not gonna elaborate on that, in case you haven't seen Lost, but that is something that actually preceded The Walking Dead. That I think that ended the season before The Walking Dead started. Well, anyway, we got to move right along. Been going a while again. Let's get into news, ratings, and info.
There's a couple weird stories on the news.
Well, I'm not going to beat around the bush. Ratings are... I am very sad to tell you that despite the fact that the season is going quite well and is quite enjoyable, The Walking Dead received the worst ratings in the 18 to 49 that it has ever experienced on the show. It did not break the 2 rating. It got a 1.98. So you may see it like on TV by the numbers that doesn't round to 2 decimals. You may see a 2.0. Regardless, that's not the point to make here. This is definitely the lowest that the show has ever gotten. I think the lowest before this was a 2.4. So 1.98 in 1849 to whatever, it's the lowest. And it got a 4.947 million viewers. So that is not the worst. The worst was, I believe, episode 2 of, you know, Guts. But it's at the worst since episode 4 of season 1, Vatos. So it's the first time since then that the show got less than 5 million on its first viewing. So, but to all this, I have to say,
it's not true. That's impossible.
Unfortunately, it seems like it is very possible. So, I don't know. It's hope maybe some viewers will come back when some, you know, if they say, you know, this is Rick's last episode, so we may get a spike with that. But, you know, and there are a lot of reasons for this. We talked about this in some detail last week, but I hope that viewers come back to the show, but it's not looking good at this point. And it definitely, like, I know there's things going on. I mentioned earlier last week that it's a couple weeks earlier. We know baseball championship is going on right now. Of course, football is big right now. So those things don't help, but it's not a good sign to see ratings for The Walking Dead on episode 2 to be sub 5 million. I mean, we may end up, if ratings really hit, we may see sub 3 million before the end of the season. And that would be a shocker, to say the least. I'm not saying that that's what's going to happen, but I fear that if we got under 5 million this week, it's going to get lower from here. So, it may, again, it may pick up as Rick moves on, but it's just not, it's not a good sign. Talking Dead was also lower this week. It got a 0.6 in the 18 to 49 with 1.694 million viewers, down from last week's 0.77 and 2.223 million viewers. So I have the charts published on the Facebook group. And Mark, as you can see, if you're looking at the show doc, it's pretty clear that red line for season 9 is, or is that brown? I don't know.
It's dark, really low.
Dark red. It is low. And it is, in the viewers number, it is higher. So it's not as bad. I think it's, that's more indicative of, you know, younger generations doing much more DVR on demand and watching other things. We had moved something you were going to say earlier to the news, but it was Walking Dead Day, I think, over the weekend, right?
Yeah, it was Saturday the 13th. Walking Dead Day is the, well, it's the anniversary of the first Walking Dead comic book to come out back in 2003, which was October 13th. Each comic book shop actually put out, they had variants of key issues of every Walking Dead comic book that had a key character death or appearance in it. One would be Michonne, the other would be Abraham, and the death of the governor, the introduction of Negan, and the death of Glenn in issue 100, issue one, which would be the very first. Second issue would be a key issue, which I'm not going to go into because comic book readers will know who it was. But I had went and I picked up one of each. And each comes with something that, you know, they have virgin covers, which would be colored version without the logo on it, or a sketch, or a black and white. And from what I could see, as I have a version of both Michonne covers, one is color, the other is black and white, and the black and white is like 25% chance that you would actually get one. The sketch version would be, which is black ink and looks like a sketch itself, would be maybe about 15%. So, and I got a bunch of those, and it's really cool. They had a lot of giveaways at certain comic shops. You could get a specific issue where they had the history of Michonne, Sadiq, and I believe the governor in one issue. And they didn't have that at my comic shop. They didn't get any freebies. They were giving away buttons, bandanas, a pin, and a couple of other things. But my comic shop didn't have it, but a lot of other places had, and they had a lot of stuff to promote it. My comic shop was kind of out of loop. But, you know, I got what I wanted, which was the variant covers, which were very interesting because each is very unique in its own. So those of you out there, I would say that are comic fans, go out there. They're still out there. I'm pretty sure of it. When I went back the other day, actually yesterday before I came home from work, I was really sick. I was tired. I took the day off today and I was sick, and I said, all right, let me see if they have any more, because I knew a few people that wanted some, and I saw, and they still had some available. So apparently it wasn't as popular as most would think, but it is the top selling comic book out there. Just go out to your local comic shop. I'm pretty sure you'll find a black bag with saying Walking Dead and a number on it, and that would be the actual issue of the variant. Mm. So go out there and get one.
Mm. There was a piece that we had to cut out of last week's episode because of time, and that was me talking about my recent experience at MegaCon Tampa Bay. It looks like this week we're also kind of long, so I'm not going to add that this week, but hopefully next week we'll have time. So that's it for this week's news. So Mark, why don't you tell listeners how they can follow us in social media and submit their feedback.
We encourage everybody to go to their Twitter and go and follow us on @WalkingDeadGSM. And to submit your feedback, the deadline for submitting feedback for our next episode is Tuesday, October 23rd at 6 p.m. Eastern or 5 p.m. Central. Most people post in our designated episode thread in our Facebook group, facebook.com/WalkingDeadGSM. To submit your theories and feedback, go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback, where you can submit text or audio, or use the SpeakPipe widget, call 304-837-2278. There is an issue with the feedback form, so we'd like to encourage you to use our email address, which would be walkingdeadgsm@gmail.com.
Yeah, we don't normally pitch that too much, but there has that, and you can still go to the feedback page because the SpeakPipe is there, and you can see the phone number to call us. We want to encourage those, but supposedly, and if you have submitted feedback to us via the form, we may not have been getting it. So if we've missed your feedback anytime in the last, well, the last several episodes, apparently the issue's gone back for quite some time. And I know that we hadn't gotten any feedback from the form. So if you're like wondering, why didn't we cover your feedback either for Fear the Walking Dead talk through or the Walking Dead talk through and you submitted it through that, unfortunately, that's probably why. So that's why we would like to encourage you if, and of course I want to encourage, because there's a lot more people that listen to us than are members of our Facebook group. So first of all, please, if you belong to Facebook, join our Facebook group. It's a lot of fun, and there's posts there all the time. And, you know, you don't have to be an active member on there, but you will get, you know, a place to submit your feedback and all of that there. And many things that you hear us talking about, they're there. So you should join. It's a great place. But yes, the feedback form is not working quite right. I don't know how long it's been. I want to apologize to anyone that we haven't covered. So anyway, long-winded, sorry, but we didn't know about it until this week. The best way to support us is through Apple Podcasts. If you're, you know, if you use Apple Podcasts, you can go to goldenspiralmedia.com/apple. And you can give us a rating or review. It's been a few weeks since we've seen any activity there, but we would certainly want to encourage you to give us a rating or review there. And there are other ways to support the network at goldenspiralmedia.com/support. As far as places to listen to us, and we'll have an episode of the Star Trek Discovery podcast coming out soon. I just have to work out the schedule with Ruthie. And Mark, it sounds like how many more episodes? I know you've recorded, you're taking a break, but are there any episodes left that haven't been released yet?
Right now, I believe episode 17 will be dropped tomorrow. We have, I would say, another 6 that should be dropped within the coming weeks. I would say by the end of the month, we'll be 100%, and you'll have all of Jessica Jones and Luke Cage season 1 all done, and we'll be weekly at that point. So everybody could actually catch up, send feedback if they want, and Steve and I will be beginning our new venture. What that may be, I do not know.
I'm sure it will be somewhere in the Marvel universe.
I'm sure it will be, and we will have fun with it.
Yeah. No update on the TM Bananas podcast. Anyway, our next episode, season 9, episode 3, is titled Warning Signs, and that is written by Corey Reed, who I mentioned before as a co-executive producer. Directed by Dan Liu, and I know that he directed Some Guy last season. That was episode 4. That was really the one good. Where, yeah, that was a really good episode. That was the one where the kingdom soldiers got mowed down.
And we lost Shiva.
Oh, yes. How could I not say that first? But, yeah, that was very sad. The description is Rick's vision for the future is threatened by a mysterious disappearance that divides the work camp where the communities are building a bridge. And of course, all right. So until next time, I'm Brian.
And I'm Mark.
And this is the Walking Dead Talk Through. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.